Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. My name is Michael Cutler, appropriately enough. I hope you've all had a good week. Glad that you could join me this Friday evening, August the 17th. Lots to talk about. For those of you new to my program, my name is Mike Cutler, as I just said, and I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration Naturalization Service. Immigration is not a single issue, but a singular issue that impacts just about every challenge and threat that our country faces today. And ever since 9/11, I've taken my show on the road to provide my perspectives, expertise, if you will, on this very important issue that impacts just about every challenge and threat that we face. Today, I have a very unusual guest on my program. But before we get to my guest, I would just love to tell you about a couple of websites I'd like you to visit. First of all, if you want to read more about me, if you are new to the program, I have two great websites I'm proud of. One is michaelcutler.net, michaelcutler.net, one word. The other one is talkborder.com, also one word, talkborder. I have video interviews up on that website, some commentaries. We expect to add more. And also, I'm a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as Californians for Population Stabilization. I do a lot of writing for them, and their great website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. They're located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, as some of my friends out there like to always point out, and the great weather that they have on the West Coast, but I'm an East Coast guy here in New York City. But today I have somebody with me who is, in fact, on the West Coast, Don Rosenberg, joining me. Don has been on my program before, both the radio program, and I did an interview with Don previously concerning a tragic situation that profoundly altered his family. Well, without further ado, let's get Don on with us, and then we will have a discussion. But suffice it to say that Don's son was struck and killed by an alien driver who had no driver's license in San Francisco. Don, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. I know you've had a tough week. It's hard for me to wish you a happy Friday, but I just started to introduce you to my audience and the background, your family and your son, Drew, who was 25 years old. But rather than have me tell your story, why don't you tell my audience your story?
Okay. Almost 2 years ago, my son Drew, who was 25 at the time and was a second-year law student in San Francisco, he was coming home from law school when a car made a last-second left-hand turn, hit him. From all the evidence, probably didn't hurt him that badly, but then the driver tried to escape, and when he escaped, he ran back and forth over him three times trying to escape, and that's what killed him. The trial for this guy was in July. He was found guilty on two counts, one driving without a license, and the other, which should have been felony vehicular homicide, but I don't know, do you bleep on this show? I'll just say a retired judge at the preliminary hearing decided that it was an accident and reduced the charges to felony, or reduced the charge from a felony to a misdemeanor. After a lot of fighting with the district attorney's office, they appealed the charges. They filed the appeal in the wrong court, and we lost our appeal rights. So
by the way, do you believe that that was an accident, or do you think that it was? Because I just find it astonishing.
I don't, you know, there's been, and you know, without going into all the details, there's been too many things that have happened in this case that are so outside the norm. As it was described to me by another district attorney, filing an appeal in a preliminary hearing case in the wrong court would be comparable to a Major League Baseball player coming up to home plate holding the wrong end of the bat.
Yep.
It's
I mean,
it's,
you know,
it was
in law
just so outrageous.
In law enforcement, we have an expression, if you see a coincidence, you better look again.
Right, and the woman who, you know, was handled this, we were introduced to her as their 22-year expert on writs. So somebody's 22-year expert, and they file it in the wrong court. And I will tell you something, we found that out right away because there was one of the criminal law professors at my son's school was helping us, and I sent her the response from the public defender, who's his only response is, you filed in the wrong court. She looked at it, and about a week later said to us, I think he's right. We questioned the DA's office. No, we know what we're doing. And to this day, which is now a year and 3 months, 4 months later, they refuse to admit they filed them. All they keep calling it was a procedural error, even though we have the documents, and, you know, it clearly says it was filed in the wrong court, once you look up the statutes.
Yeah, the operation was a success, but the patient died. Procedural error.
So, there's just been too many other things. As a matter of fact, one other thing that I just found out, I mean, I'll leave it for the end of the story. So the trial was a couple of weeks ago. He was found guilty on both counts. My wife and I were in San Francisco yesterday for the sentencing. And he was sentenced to 6 months in jail, 3 years probation. I mean, the maximum he could have gotten was a year by statute, but because of California overcrowding, it would have been 6 months anyway.
By the way, I'm going to stop you for 1 second. A lot of the overcrowding is due to criminal aliens who are clogging the jails and the criminal justice system. And I want to make one other point real quickly. This isn't about vilifying immigrants, folks. I want to be so clear about this. It's not about singling out immigrants and saying that they're the problem, we're going to scapegoat them. The immigration laws are not about any race or religion or ethnicity. Don and I are both Jewish. I lost a lot of my family to the Holocaust. I was named for my grandma who died in the Holocaust. I could never have enforced laws if they singled out a group of people, either by race, religion, ethnicity, or other such factor. The only distinction immigration laws make is as to whether or not a person is a citizen or not. And legally, the term for a non-citizen is an alien. The open borders folks, the people who oppose securing our borders, get all torqued about the word alien. Legally, the definition is any person who's not a citizen or national. In the name of open borders and in the name of eliminating the distinction between what it is to be a citizen or be an alien in our country, a lot of people have lost their lives. Unfortunately, Don's son is one of those people, and unfortunately, he's not the only one. The death toll, according to Congressman Steve King, when he did a news conference last year on the steps of the Capitol, he made the point that his research indicated that roughly 7,000 people, one way or the other, lose their lives in the United States every year right now because we won't secure the borders and we don't adequately enforce immigration laws, and then cities and states create sanctuaries. And do all kinds of bizarre things. For example, the issue, and I'm sure you're going to get into it momentarily, about what happens when they find a driver who's driving without a license and what happens to the impound laws that at their foundation are supposed to protect the public. I mean, that's why we have immigration laws, Don. I'm sure you would agree with me. Two goals, protect American lives, protect American jobs. And yet this travesty, I can't even imagine how you, your wife, your other children, family members, close friends, people who knew your son, how they must feel at this point.
Well, you know, when this all happened, you know, the first thing, I distinctly remember sitting in my friend's car who was driving us to the airport that night so we could get up to San Francisco, and I had no idea. At that point, all I knew was that he was killed in a traffic accident.
I didn't
know anything
imagine.
More. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, what if it really was an accident? How am I going to deal with the person who killed him? Because, look, anybody who's driven a car, I mean, I've been driving for over 40 years.
As I have.
Right. I mean, there are times where, I've wiped the sweat from my brow because I didn't see a stop sign or, you know, I veered into another lane for whatever reason. And it's like, boy, if somebody had been there, I could have killed them. Now, you know, that to me, that's an accident. And I thought, boy, if that's what happened, how am I going to deal with this person? And I actually was starting to feel bad for that person because they'd have to live with it. But, of course, what we found out was that the person who killed our son has been in the country, and he's in the country legally. He's under temporary protective status. He's been in the country for 10 years. Well, at that time, he had been in the country for 10 years. And he did not have a driver's license. He had the right to get a driver's license.
Citizen of El Salvador, I believe, yes?
Honduras.
Honduras,
and,
okay.
And here's what's an interesting statistic that doesn't, you know, if Steve King is right about the 7,000, and I know 3,000 are unlicensed drivers' deaths, so that would, you know, 7,000 certainly wouldn't surprise me. But here's the thing. This statistic will not show up as an illegal alien committing the crime because the guy was here legally. However, as I have said to a lot of people, if the system was not so overrun by illegal aliens driving, the laws would be more enforced. So what ended up happening with this guy, it was Hispanic, no license, no problem, let him go. Because he was caught a few months before driving without a license, they dropped the charges, and off he went. So to me, every illegal alien holds some responsibility for my son's death, whether or not they were driving the car. Because I will tell you something, I can't speak for the country, but I can speak for California. Driving without a license, never had a license, is not a problem except with illegal aliens. Now, there's a big problem, to be fair, there's a big problem with people driving with suspended or revoked licenses, and they're all citizens. So I'm not forgiving them either, but that's what ended up happening. So, you know, he drove, he kills my son. What I found out yesterday was the sentencing. What I found out after the sentencing, and again, I was lied to by the DA's office over this, is, and I don't know if I told you this yet, Mike, unless I put it in the email.
Well, I'm sitting down. I'll put on my seatbelt, so go right ahead.
One of the questions that I had from day one is, why does this guy have the right to get a license? Why does he not have one? He bought his own car. He's been driving for years. He's not restricted to get a license. There's got to be a reason, and whatever that reason is germane to this issue.
Well, I'll tell you what. I can address part of that, the insanity of our politicians, some of them, not all of them. There is some real good guys out there. Lou Barletta, former mayor of Hazleton. In fact, they just argued their appeal in court this week in Pennsylvania. He's now a member of Congress. And he runs the Freshman Immigration Reform Caucus. It's a privilege to consider him a friend. You know, I interviewed him for TalkBorder.com as well. Steve King is certainly on the right page. Chuck Grassley, Jeff Sessions. We can mention people who've done the right thing. But, you know, I testify, Walter Jones, by the way, who participated in the press conference along with Steve King. Walter Jones, Congressman Jones, I believe he's from North Carolina, is trying to require a day of remembrance for Americans who've lost their lives because of aliens who've committed crimes in America. And I testified, in addition to having been before, I think I'm up to 15 congressional hearings, I've been before state legislative hearings. And I don't know if I told you the story, but I certainly want my audience to know this story. A couple of years ago, back when Mr. Spitzer was our governor, the guy who was the cop on Wall Street who was cavorting with hookers. I mean, you got to love these people. And then, of course, he gets a television program. Reality, huh? Some kind of reality program, I guess. The argument was that they have to give illegal aliens driver's licenses for a couple of reasons. Number one, as they said it, and I was going crazy, the current commissioner of motor vehicles made the statement that driving is not a privilege, but a necessity. I was sitting with the previous commissioner, and I thought he was going to get up and punch the current commissioner in the head. And by the way, I'm having a senior moment. The name of the former commissioner escapes my memory at the moment, but I want you to know that he is a Latino American, an American of Latino ethnicity. And he looked at me, and we've had a number of meetings, and he said, Mike, I can't believe what I'm hearing. And I could just see this guy boiling over. I said, calm down. I mean, what are you going to do? The guy's obviously a clown. All he needs is a rubber nose and floppy feet. Because here you have the Commissioner of Motor Vehicles in an open hearing before the New York State Senate saying that driving is really not a privilege, it's a necessity. And then they had these two crazy arguments. Number one, these people, the illegal aliens, are going to drive anyway, so at least if they can have a license, they can drive more safely and they can get insurance. Second of all, the issue of illegal immigration has nothing to do with the states. This is a failure of the federal government, and if the federal government can't or won't secure the borders, the states have no business getting involved. Those were the two arguments. When eventually my turn came to speak, I had two responses. I said, you know, people are going to violate all the laws under the sun anyway, you know, using their term, they're going to drive anyway. And I said, so look at it this way. People violate all sorts of laws anyway, and generally when they do, they go to jail. But by this reasoning, we also know that convicted felons very often carry firearms anyway. So if we're so willing to just look at a situation where people routinely violate the laws, I have a proposal that I think we could say would improve public safety. Let's give every convicted felon a pistol permit and a firearm. Give them good training. Hopefully we could convince them to use trigger locks between bank robberies and drive-by shootings. You could argue you've improved public safety. And if you improve their accuracy with the weapon, they'll be less likely to hit an innocent bystander. My gosh, think of how much you've just improved public safety. And of course, there were certain members of the Senate who were thrilled with the statement. There were others who were furious. And then I said, the argument that this is a federal responsibility, I said, you know what? Drugs come across the same border that provides access to the illegal aliens. And yet, we enforce narcotics laws on the city, state level as well as the federal level. If you really believe that the state or the cities have no business picking up the slack when the feds fail, then I'd like to know how many members of the New York State Senate will be willing to vote right now to order an immediate cessation to all state narcotics investigations. Do you know it looked like a fire drill? The Democrats, just about every Democrat in that room, got up and headed for the door. And I'm a registered Democrat, and I know you are. And so I'm not being partisan here, folks. But, I mean, it's just astonishing. And talking about the nexus between drugs and illegal aliens, when Napolitano says the borders have never been more secure, and she provides doctored statistics from the Border Patrol. And, by the way, Numbers USA just has an email that went out. Apparently, the ICE Union is forming a petition because they're furious over what the president has done with this new fiasco of providing perhaps 2 million people with employment authorization. But here's my metric of determining if the borders are secure. If the drugs are still getting into the United States, specifically cocaine and heroin, which are not produced in the United States, you know, pot, marijuana gets grown in the United States. So let's leave that out of the equation. Cocaine and heroin are imported. If they are able to get their supply of heroin and cocaine into the United States, the border is not secure. And we know it's not secure. But again, politics and political objectives and campaign contributions trump national security. One of the folks from the 9/11 families whose son was killed on 9/11 referred to his death, the son's death, as the cost of doing business. He would probably say that just as his son's death was the cost of doing business, apparently so was your son's death to these bums who have forgotten that they were sent to represent the citizens either of the state that they represent in the case of California or the American people at large in the case of the federal government. Your comments.
Well, I mean, I clearly feel like a second-class citizen. I mean, I was told by my state assemblywoman when I went to Sacramento to testify against the bill that it was she was voting for this bill that I was against because it was a civil rights issue. And I said to her, well, I agree with you, but it's the civil rights of the people that are killed, not the people doing the killing. But you know, she didn't see it that way, and she voted for this bill to stop impounding cars at sobriety checkpoints. It's like, here's the one chance you get to get these cars off the road before they've hurt anybody, and you're saying, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to give it right back to them. So,
and by the way, isn't it remarkable to talk about illegal aliens and civil rights? Human rights, I agree. Due process, I agree. But civil rights are really those rights that, and the big issue for that was the African Americans, Black Americans, who were treated indeed as second-class citizens, and they said, "No, wait a minute. If you're an American citizen, then you're an American citizen, and you should have freedom from discrimination. You should have every opportunity to, you know, as the Army used to say, be all you can be within our society. Own property, drive a car, vote in the elections, have a good job, get a good education. Those are civil rights." How does civil rights apply to people whose presence in our country represents a violation of law?
Well, as you said earlier, the commissioner who said that it's a necessity to drive, okay, let's say it's a necessity to drive. Well, it's also a necessity to make sure that you're in the country legally. So you know, and as I said to her, you know, they don't have the right to be here, so you can't give them a right to drive. And again, driving is, you know, compared to some of the issues you're talking about on national security, is a low-level issue.
Well, it is and it isn't, because the driver's license, we know from the experience of 9/11, and, you know, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission, they know that those terrorists who attacked us so savagely on September 11th, 2001, in the aggregate, had over 300 false aliases or variations of false aliases and numerous driver's licenses that provided them with opportunities to get on board airplanes and trains and get a job and so forth. In fact, when I went before the Maryland State Legislature, and I'm sure you're hearing the same thing in California, they said, we have to give these quote-unquote undocumented, which means they can't prove who they are, by the way, we have to give these people driver's licenses because how can they get to work otherwise? Well, wait a moment. They're not supposed to be here. They're not supposed to be working. So we're doing everything we can to make it impossible for the laws to be enforced. The idea, again, to the immigration laws, was to protect American jobs as well as lives. You know, the Labor Department used to administer and enforce the immigration laws prior to the Second World War because they knew that if we were going to be a successful country, we had to grow the middle class. How do you grow the middle class? You make certain that Americans who have skills or education, who are hardworking, and have a little bit of luck, or as we like to say in French, mazel thrown in for good measure, can write the next American success story. It wasn't just having lots of people to come here from all over the world that made America the success story. It was that we did everything possible to expand the middle class. Now we are eating the middle class. Alan Greenspan went before Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee of the Senate back on April 30th, 2009, again, go to my website, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com. I think I wrote about it there. Certainly Caps Web has articles I've written about it. You can actually get a link to the Greenspan testimony for Schumer, where he talked about how Americans with skills have become the privileged elite and that they're making too much money and that the goal should be to eliminate inequality in wages between those who have skills and education and those who don't. I thought that was called communism. And he said we could achieve this by eliminating immigration quotas so that we get Americans to compete with foreign workers. So think where that's going to lead. An American who has a degree in engineering or computer programming or science or whatever is now going to compete with somebody from India, let's say, who gets a free education. They don't have a student loan the way Americans do. They're accustomed to working for $30,000 or $40,000 a year. So now you have American computer programmers competing for jobs at half or a third the wages that they would normally expect to be paid. This is going to make America great? Absolutely not. They are betraying the American dream, and they're betraying American citizens by everything that they're doing. And then Mr. Obama says, well, I'm going to basically enact the DREAM Act because Congress didn't act, so I will. Congress acted. It said, no, this is bad legislation. They voted it down. So it's misleading statement after misleading statement. He said 800,000. The Pew Hispanic Center the same day on June 15th said it would be 1.4 million. Then the Migration Policy Institute, headed up by Doris Meisner, the former commissioner of immigration, who spearheaded the amnesty of 86, said no, it's 1.8 million. Most recently, Fox News and CBS News in New York have estimated 2 million. And I'm willing to bet that by the time we're done with this fiasco, it will be 4 million. And nobody talks about how many Americans are out of work. 60 Minutes did two pieces about kids living in the back of trucks, and one in four American children are living in the shadows. in poverty, fearful that they may be taken from their parents because they've become homeless. There was another story about Americans with college educations who've been out of work for so long that they've run through their unemployment benefits. And while you can't discriminate based on age or religion or gender or ethnicity, you can on how long you've been out of work. So there are companies that will openly tell you, if you've been out of work for more than a year, we have no interest in hiring you. So you have all these people out of work, and now the president says, let's add 2 million new workers who have as much right to work in America as lawful immigrants or U.S. citizens, and nobody is screaming about this? I have yet to hear a television program draw the connection, really draw it tightly, between what the president has just done and what this means to Americans who are desperate for a job so that they don't lose their homes to foreclosure. Have I lost my mind here, Don?
I think what's happening is making us lose our minds, but we haven't lost our minds based on that. Look, you know, in any, whichever side you're on of that, you know, of Obama's decision, the first thing you should do when you're trying to solve a problem is know what it is.
Right, identify the problem is the first step.
Right, at the very least, this thing should have started off as, you know what, you got 90 days, 120 days, whatever you need to sign up. We're promising you nothing, but we have to know how many people are we talking about before we start doing something. I mean, you know what? When airlines sell tickets to get on the plane, they know how many seats they have.
Well, yeah, they do overbook occasionally, but I guess if Obama was running the airline, they'd be strapping seats onto the wings of the airplane also.
Yeah, I mean, it's an election year ploy. In theory, I understand the concept that I don't believe it's fair that children should suffer the sins of their parents, but I also don't believe that it's fair that American citizens should suffer the sins of the government.
but here's my two points, though. And, you know, I think we spoke earlier about this. I was on Curtis Lewa's radio show earlier this week, and Curtis said, well, you know, do you feel bad for these kids and so forth? I said, well, you know, there's a couple of points here. Number one, if I took my son, when he was younger, I have four kids. If I took, let's say, my youngest son, threw him in the back of my car, no seatbelt, or put him in my front seat, no seatbelt, even better, and went zipping down the highway 80 miles an hour through a 40-mile zone, if the cops pulled me over, I would not only get a ticket, I would not only maybe get arrested for reckless driving, but I would be charged with endangering the welfare of my child, and rightfully so. In fact, there's a law in New York that if you drive drunk, and have a child in the car, that's a separate felony because of some kids that were killed that way. And I agree with all of those measures, the sanctity of life, especially children's lives. Why doesn't anyone get prosecuted for dragging their children through the desert where lots of kids do die, where the temperature can be above 120 and there's no water, there's dangerous insects and rattlesnakes and banditos and you name it? So nothing ever happens. There's no consequence to the person that smuggled the kids across the border. And then when they get here, they're going to be competing with American kids. And I feel terrible for these kids that are brought here by their parents, but the parents bear the responsibility, and then the parents reap the reward. If that child somehow manages to remain in the United States, they become the hardship for the parent to justify staying here. When that child goes to school, if they realize the kid is living in poverty, they start to give aid to the kid. It helps the parents. And the other point that I would make, though, this isn't about children. See, it's been so deceptive. I wrote a piece for Fox News Latino where I talked about Obama's prosecutorial discretion. It was really prosecutorial deception. Because here you have Obama saying this is about helping young people and kids and children. And then they said it would be up to age 30. Well, that's crazy. I don't know what society you should be living in if 30-year-olds are considered children. And now it turns out that you can file up until your 31st birthday. So we've squeezed in another year on that end of it. So here's the problem. How do you verify somebody who walks in, he's 30 years old, and says, I graduated from high school when I was 17, that was, you know, 13, 14 years ago, and by the way, I know my parents registered me under a different name. So now lots of luck trying to figure out who this guy is and whether he's lying or not. One of the pieces of evidence they are allowed to provide, by the way, is employment records from their employer. So what happens when the employer says, here's your W-2, Are they going to go after the employer for hiring an illegal alien, or are they going to give him a form of amnesty as well? In essence, there are no longer any immigration laws, or very few immigration laws in the United States. Not because Congress changed the law, not because the Supreme Court invalidated the laws, but because the President of the United States, with the stroke of a pen, basically made a mockery of the laws. And here's something to think about. The people that are getting employment authorization in many states, although Jan Brewer, I think, did the right thing in Arizona, so we're not giving you driver's licenses, will get driver's licenses in many states. And what happens in 2 years? Well, if Mr. Obama is reelected in 2 years, he's going to, no doubt, renew these people's authority to stay here. Maybe for 10 years. God only knows. So, you know, understand the damage that this does to everything. And if we don't secure the border, and when you get here, you're going to be able to lie and claim you were here for a requisite period of time and then apply to get employment authorization while Americans are losing jobs overnight. This is nuts. And, well, look, and then you have to look at the national security implications as well.
What happens if from now until January 20th,
yep,
all of this work is done and all these things happen and Reagan and Romney wins the election on January 21st, he signs an executive order canceling everything. I mean,
well,
think of the chaos that that's going to create.
Well,
for it or not, it's just, okay, you've got a problem, and now whichever side you're on, it's been made 10 times worse.
Well, because understand that we used to say that we are a country of law, and now we have to add the tagline, not so much.
Well, look, I told you earlier when we were talking earlier, these cases of people that are here illegally that are trying to get admitted to their state bars. And I mean, if there's anything that shows the absurdity of the whole thing is here are people that are sworn to uphold the law.
They're officers of the court.
And you've got, I know in our case, we have the Attorney General saying this person should be admitted to the bar. To me,
well,
that disqualifies her to be Attorney General.
Well, Arthur, now let me ask you a question, Don. I sat in a legislative hearing in Maryland, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's the water in the Chesapeake Bay, although it's a beautiful bay, and I love the seafood in Maryland. But there were members of the state legislature when I testified who, when they talked about illegal aliens, shrugged their shoulders and openly said, we know that when we pass laws, people violate the laws. What's the big deal? Now, I have to tell you, I almost fell out of my chair. If you remember Artie Johnson and laughing when he would go riding by and keel over. That was kind of how I felt. I almost fell out of my chair sideways. You have state legislators who are paid, this is their livelihood, to write laws, blithely saying, yeah, people ignore laws all the time. Is that a problem? What could you possibly, if you want to play a game of can you top this, I mean, where do you go with that one? What could you possibly, I was left speechless. You sound kind of speechless right now.
Look, we have the police chief in Los Angeles who has said that allowing unlicensed drivers to drive will make the roads safer. That's I mean, I'm paraphrasing his quote, but that's basically his quote. Allowing them to drive will make the roads safer, which brings me back to what I was telling you, what I just found out. So the guy who, you know, who killed...
Yeah, I want my listeners to hear this. Go ahead.
He you know, we found, you know, after he got sentenced yesterday, and then we found out afterwards that he had tried 3 times to get a driver's license and flunked each time. Now, what I don't know yet, I will soon, is when did that happen and what part did he flunk? So, to me, the thing that was so annoying to me is that when I had asked the DA's office this over and over and over again, they kept telling me the DMV has no record of him whatsoever, and that wasn't true. So then we've got the record. If they'd asked for it, they would have gotten it. I couldn't ask for the record because there are privacy laws. Now, the DA who handled our case, it was turned over to him 4 weeks before the trial because the woman who was handling it went out on maternity leave. And he, as much as I hate the DA's office in San Francisco, this guy was phenomenal. and did a great job, and we would have never convicted the guy if this guy hadn't taken over the case. He made one call to a DMV guy and got the information. So they
but
lied.
It's a slam dunk. We used to do it all the time. And we could even do it on a computer, just punch a name in, and it would pop up within 20 seconds.
But here's the thing. They don't. As you asked me before, do I think there was something going on? They didn't want to know.
Yep.
They did because if this, and I'll find this out, you know, probably next week, if he had tried and failed that test, at least even once, if not three times, before he was caught in June 2010 driving without a license, you then have to say, and why did you drop the charges? This guy failed three driving tests, and then when you caught him, you dropped the charges. Why is that? So they don't want me. We found so many things that we had to dig up ourselves that they didn't want us to know. They made it look like the information wasn't there, and then we found it. So back to your question, do I think a lot of this was on purpose? Yeah, I do. I honestly believe that
All right, but now look at the anarchy, okay? Ask yourself, why should anyone respect the law? Why should, if I wanted to, why should I bother getting a driver's license if I was to move to California?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask that question because I testified in Sacramento, in front of the Senate Transportation Committee in early July. And it was a bill that had been submitted to stop impounding cars of all unlicensed drivers. And when I say all, I only mean illegal alien unlicensed drivers, non-citizen unlicensed drivers. And it was to stop that. And prior to the hearing, when you know we were just, I was sitting around with some of the police officers that were there to testify, you know, same side as me, that this is a terrible law. I said to one of them, why do I need a driver's license? And he said, well, because it's the law. And I said, well, no, because, yes, it's the law, but look what's happening. I said, really, why do I need this? And he said, well, the only reason I can think of, it's the law, and it shows that you know how to drive, shows that you've passed certain tests. I said, no, the reason I need a driver's license is because I'm not judgment-proof, and they are.
Yep.
That's
you want the driver's license so you can conduct business as usual because it's considered a de facto national identity document, isn't it?
Well, you'll see a big in September when the legislature is back in session. There is a bill to give driver's licenses or allow illegal aliens to, you know, get a driver's license. You know, assuming they pass, it's coming up. Assemblyman Gil Cedillo, who will be termed out at the end of the year. This has been his dream for years. He's actually got it passed twice, but vetoed by Schwarzenegger and Gray Davis. But he's trying again, and I think there'll be a real Donnybrook on this one, although I think they're going to try to push it through really fast. Now, it'll be interesting. Jerry Brown has made a statement, you know, a year ago that he would not sign a driver's license bill for, you know, illegal aliens, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I have a feeling that the trade has already been made for his high-speed line that he wants, and I'll bet anything if it passes, it'll sign. But
wait a moment. Are you saying that you're about to get railroaded?
Yes. Very.
I'm sorry about that.
But I didn't even think of that, but that's a good one. I'll have to use that on somebody.
See,
so,
there you go.
You know, so now...
I guess that they thought they were on the right track.
The right track. Okay, we're going to keep going here. But here's what's even crazier about this.
Go ahead.
The one thing that Cedillo is willing to do, we're not sure that he's willing to do it. I know the chief of police in Los Angeles wants to give them driver's licenses, but wants them to be, you know, provisional, different licenses, so they can't be used for other things. And of course,
like voting, and getting on airplanes.
And airplanes, but of course, the people who, you know, want these licenses are bitching and moaning. No, I won't accept that.
Because we know what this is about. To the politicians, it's about votes. That's what the motor voter law that Bill Clinton shoved through the process was about.
So that'll be exciting here for the next the next couple of months.
Now, I want to ask you a question. When you were a kid, did you ever go to the movies and wait on a long line for a Saturday matinee? Maybe it was raining outside.
I know what you're saying. Yes, I have, and I've used this analogy a million times, but go ahead.
Well, there you go. You plagiarist, you.
I've said this. I've been in lines at movies where people try, I mean, as recently as, you know, months ago,
Okay. Somebody
tries to cut in and people almost get in fights over it.
Well, I've seen it happen in my supermarket when the line is long, but imagine you're waiting for a long time in the rain and some guy goes in through the side door and gets better seats and doesn't pay. Now, imagine immigrants who are waiting for years in their home countries because they want to follow the law. You know, my first wife died of cancer about 27 years ago. And my sister-in-law, her brother's wife, was born in Spain. They moved to Venezuela. He met her while he was on vacation. He's a school teacher. And over dinner one day, she tried to get me to explain to her why it was so much easier for her friends who came here illegally to get their green cards than it was for her. Imagine how lawful immigrants must feel now. In fact, I'm heading to Texas September the 8th, to talk about immigration and so forth in Houston, Texas. The folks with the Texans for Immigration Reform, Immigration Reform and Enforcement, TFIRE, have invited me out. I'm very much looking forward to the trip. And she has a delightful British accent. She abided by the law, got her green card, and so forth. And she expressed to me her outrage that here she did everything right, and it took so long and so much money, and suddenly these people are jumping the line with the approval of the President of the United States of America.
Well, we had, you know, when I was fighting the LAPD over this new policy they've adopted, which basically says we don't have to follow state driving laws, I testified at quite a few police commission hearings, and there was one where we literally had over 500 people there.
Is that the one where I saw the video where
you
almost started a brawl, you troublemaker?
Well, the guy tried to shut me up, and people were screaming, "Let him speak, let him speak,"
yep.
and the president of the police commission wouldn't. But at that meeting, you know, they basically would call five names at a time. You'd line up, and you know, each get to speak, and when they started calling some names, and they got to some, you know, Hispanic names, and I thought, oh great, here we go. Those people got up, they were furious. Why is this happening? I spent 10 years to get into this country legally.
Yep.
I spent another 10 years to become a citizen. I did this, I did that, all these things, and one after another were absolutely furious. I've gotten lots of emails to that effect. That people, you know, Hispanic people are saying, please don't count me in with this. I'm totally against this. And I believe me, every time somebody calls me a bigot, I've said to them, I tell you what, before you call me a bigot, you go down to the Mexican border and you ask the millions of people down there who are Mexican and have been trying to get into this country for years legally, ask them what they think about these people that have jumped ahead of them. And then call them a bigot.
Well, here's a couple of points. First of all, you associated, as everyone does, immigration with Hispanics. You know, as an immigration agent, I spent years where I never arrested a single Spanish-speaking alien.
Yeah, but
I arrested
California.
Well, I understand, but
yeah,
in New York, you
right.
know, one of the interesting things is everyone keeps talking about the border state. New York is a border state also. First of all, we have a big chunk of New York State borders Canada. We have a seaport. We have John F. Kennedy International Airport. Any state that has a seaport or an international airport is also a border state. When I was at DEA intelligence back in 1988, 89, 90, before I was promoted to senior special agent and assigned to the drug task force, I did an analysis of arrest statistics at DEA. And I was astonished that in New York City, 60% of the people we were arresting for drug-related crimes in New York City were identified as foreign-born. New York City. So, number one, it's not about, again, ethnicity. I want to be very clear about that. Number two, we hear a mythology. Well, if the president wants the Latino vote, this is what he has to do. Don't you find that an insidious form of profiling to say that, oh, if a guy's last name is Rodriguez, we know how he's going to vote? And if a guy's name is Rosenberg, we know how he's going to vote. You know, we know about the black vote, the Jewish vote. It's profiling. It's absolutely profiling, and here's the other point. The most likely victims of ethnic organized crime groups are people living within the ethnic immigrant communities. And it's not just within the Latino community. It's Asian organized crime. I spent nearly 2 years working on a case involving Asian organized crime with the FBI. It's the Caribbean community, the Jamaican drug dealers, and so forth. We see it within the Russian mob. We see it in European gangs as well. You know, every ethnicity has the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if you're living in an ethnic immigrant community, the criminals who infest those communities, the members of the violent gangs, whether it's MS-13 or in the Asian communities, the Ghost Shadows and the Flying Dragons, they look to recruit the children of those immigrants into their gangs and destroy their lives. The violence that plays out, most of the time, winds up injuring or killing, again, members of that same ethnicity. So when MS-13 does a slashing or whatever, the most likely victim is going to be somebody who happens to be Latino. When the Asian organized crime groups try to shake down a restaurant owner for cash and the guy doesn't pay and they fire rounds into the restaurant, yeah, occasionally some Caucasian or black person may get hit by a round, but more likely than not, the people that get shot to death are Asians. So why on earth, and by the way, the illegals tend to displace them in the workplace also. So they're losing their jobs, their lives, and their children to these criminals and to people who violate the laws one way or the other. Why would anybody of any ethnicity be thrilled that our government ignored those very same laws that at the foundation are designed to protect them? Am I getting something wrong here again?
Nope.
I mean, this isn't anti-immigrant, folks. If you want secure borders, it's not because you don't like brown skin. It's about saying, I don't want somebody to come here who's a criminal. You know, there's a section of the Immigration Act, Section 212, the Title 8 equivalent is 1182. And if you look at that law, it categorizes who we're supposed to keep out. You know, I started my career with the INS as an inspector at Kennedy Airport, an immigration inspector. Did it for 4 years before I became an agent. And if you look at the laws, it starts out with excluding aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or aliens with mental illness and they're violent or sex offenders. And then it goes to the convicted felons, the human rights violators, the war criminals, the prostitutes, the gang members, spies, terrorists, and so forth, money launderers. And then we get to the aliens taking the jobs Americans desperately need or people who become a public charge. So these aren't race-based laws. These are laws that are designed to protect the lives and jobs of Americans, mostly the lives. And that's why the Justice Department wound up running immigration before it went to Homeland Security. And I find it so astonishing that they take immigration, move it to Homeland Security, and Janet Napolitano turns around and says, well, these aren't serious laws. If you run the border, it's not really a crime. Well, that's baloney. Because if you run the border and you've already been deported, you could be looking at 20 years in jail. I went and worked with Al D'Amato when he was New York State senior senator back in the early 80s and convinced him to write that law so that we would, you know, really drop a safe on the head of criminals who got deported and came back. And it goes to the issue that aliens who run the border, there's no record made of their entry. They obviously belong to categories of excludable aliens, or they would have come in through the front door, not the back door. So look at how all of this places American lives at risk. You know, they strip search 85-year-old women at airports. But never mind that somebody runs the border. There was an interesting story. I don't know if you saw it, Don. Some guy on a jet ski out in Jamaica Bay outside Kennedy Airport ran into problems with the jet ski.
Oh, yeah. I just saw that. Right. He got through the airport.
Right. So the guy wades ashore, right? He swims to the shore. I guess his jet ski sank. He wades through the thing, walks across two runways, walks into a terminal, dripping wet, which, by the way, is how the term wetback started. And even there, you know, I find this kind of inconsistent. The word gringo, we all associate Mexicans referring to Americans as gringos. You know what a gringo is?
Mm-mm.
Well, when Pershing, I believe it was, went into Mexico chasing Pancho Villa and the Mexican criminals, they were wearing their uniforms, which happened to be green. So they were yelling, green, go. Okay? So that's how that started. And we used to refer to illegal aliens as wetbacks, because if they waded across the Rio Grande and they were running from the border, a Border Patrol officer seeing them could point to his partner and say, hey, look, there goes a wetback, meaning that the guy's shirt was wet from the back. So that gave them probable cause to chase him. Now, you know, is one term worse than the other? No, and there's nothing wrong with those terms when you understand how the language and how the terminology evolved. So
right,
here's
yeah.
this guy who, as an immigration agent in the old days, when we went to Border Patrol Academy, as I did back in 72, would have said someone is dripping wet, meaning that it's so obvious he's an illegal alien. This guy was dripping wet, not as an illegal alien, but as a guy who had just come in from Jamaica Bay.
Yeah.
And what did they do? They arrest him and they charge him with trespass. I don't know what he was supposed to do, drown? So they're all upset and they said, oh my God, he penetrated JFK's security network. During that same period, how many illegal aliens waded across the Rio Grande?
Right.
And not all of them were Mexicans looking to mow your lawn.
Right.
Just a couple of interesting thoughts for everybody who's out there. It's astonishing that if some 90-year-old guy who looks like Mr. Magoo opens the wrong door at the airport, everybody will go crazy. They'll lock down the airport, and everybody will have to come off the airplanes, and they'll search the baggage, and the schedule goes to hell in a handbasket. But how many people during that same period of time charge across the border and enter the United States for God knows what purpose? And that's just another day, and you have Napolitano making that ridiculous statement that from time to time terrorists have entered the United States by running our border. From time to time. That's like saying between crimes, cities with high crime rates are perfectly safe. Between the crimes.
Right. Right. Nobody was killed in the last hour. What a safe city we have.
Isn't that wonderful? We must be doing something right. Can you make this stuff up?
I wish it was made up. I really wish it was, but as they say, truth is stranger than fiction.
No, it really and truly is. I don't even know what to make of it any longer. It's just astonishing to me. And so we live in this wacky world where your son perishes because of this, where other people have died. You know, I had Tom Machete on my program, Machete, whose brother, New York City cop, 24 years old, gets killed by an illegal alien who I had physically deported. The guy gets arrested a couple of times by the NYPD, and they refuse to notify immigration. The third time he gets arrested, he goes for Officer Machete's firearm, and bullets fly, and this cop gets killed. His wife is pregnant with a daughter he would never meet. And how does that happen? So you look at all of this crazy stuff happening, but this is perfectly acceptable to the politicians. In New York, Governor Cuomo said that he doesn't want to participate in the Secure Communities program because the potential exists that we might wind up identifying and deporting aliens who haven't been convicted of serious felonies. So in other words, if you run the border, it's perfectly okay with him. Mayor Bloomberg wants New York to be a sanctuary city, and it is, but then he wants to charge congestion pricing for New Yorkers who drive into the city because it's crowded with people who probably shouldn't be here. I mean, this is better than Tony Soprano's version of protection, you know. Forget about throwing a brick through your window. He's going to bring all these illegals into New York City, and then when you can't move and you wind up spending, as I have, a half hour trying to drive one block in Midtown Manhattan during the day, the solution is to charge people extra money to go into Midtown Manhattan, even if you're already a New York City resident and paying property taxes.
Well, look, my son was driven back and forth over three times and killed, and it's not considered a violent crime.
Or a felony.
Well,
or
yeah.
a felony.
Right.
I mean, what could you possibly say? That's not a felony?
Right after my son was killed, Lindsay Lohan allegedly stole a bracelet or a necklace or whatever. That was a felony.
And that made headlines.
If she had done that three times, three separate
right.
times in California and was convicted on each count, the third count would have put her in jail for life.
Yes.
If this guy gets out and drives again and kills somebody, it's a misdemeanor again. If he goes to jail for a year, which is all the penalty would be, and he gets out and he kills somebody a third time, it's a misdemeanor, and he
again.
Goes to jail for another year.
But by the way, if the situation had been reversed and your son had driven over him, I guarantee you they would not have charged your son with a misdemeanor. He would have been taken
I guarantee you the illegal immigrant rights groups would have been all over this thing, and there would have been, you know, top-notch attorneys,
yep.
you know, dealing with it.
There would have been protests and marches and everything else.
Right, right. It would have been absolutely, you know, insanity.
And so I've come to call those people, you know, and I love how we keep getting branded by our opponents, and they refer to us as being anti-immigrant, and we are not. Let's be so clear about this, folks. My mother was an immigrant, came here as a 14-year-old girl. She lived in a rooming house, worked in an umbrella factory for $3 a week back in the 20s. I am anything but anti-immigrant. But the people that call us that are themselves opposed to border security. They are immigration anarchists. Let's be so clear about what we're talking about. This isn't about trying to incorporate immigrants into American society. I'm all for that. And by the way, we admit more than 1.1 million lawful immigrants into the United States each and every year. These are the people who are granted green cards. They are immediately placed on the pathway to United States citizenship. That is more than the rest of the world combined. It's not that we don't allow people in legally. It's so astonishing. I was talking with someone earlier this week, and he said to me, well, you know, I spoke to my senator, my congressman in California, I forget which congressman, and the guy said, well, we have no choice but to let in the illegal workers because we need them on the farms, because the Mexicans who want to come to work on American farms can't get visas. They ended the program. I said, really? They ended the H-2A program?
Yeah, right.
So I immediately went online and found out how many thousands of Mexican farm workers are given that visa. And here's something interesting. Guess what the numeric limitation is for Mexican farm workers on those visas?
There is none.
And guess how quickly they can process the application for Mexican farm workers? The same
probably.
Day.
Yeah, I was going to say probably very quickly.
The same day and an unlimited number. But here's this member of the Congress telling this guy, well, we have no alternative because there's no longer a legal way for Mexican farm workers to come to the United States.
Well, look, I just
it's
had
lie one. After lie after lie, and again, folks, this is not victimless crime.
Yeah, but first of all, the numbers are, you know, I had lunch with a friend of mine today, and we were talking about this, and he said, well, you know, if we didn't have these people here, there'd be nobody to pick the crops. And I said, first of all, what percentage of illegal immigrants in this country do you think are working in agriculture? And
right.
he said, I don't know, 30% to 40%. I said, try three.
Now, I got another question, and here's something that I raised with other members of Congress, even the ones who are good ones on the issue. And this was somebody in the Senate. I'm not going to single anybody out. And you know, I understand that. I guess you just can't do business the right way in Congress, the way things now stand in wacky world. You know, I think we need to change the America's slogan from E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one, to abandon all hope, all ye who enter here. But I mean, it's astonishing, because what I had said was, if you want to issue many more visas for farm workers from other countries, I have a proposal, because they were talking about adding another 500,000. And I said, why don't you, along with that, say that they have to hire 2,000 ICE agents, immigration enforcement agents, simply to police the system. And here's my reasoning, Don. It doesn't matter if you give an alien a farm worker visa if at the end of the day he doesn't show up at the farm. So you need to police the system to make certain that if the guy does go to the farm, that the guy does get admitted, he works on the farm. Back in the late 70s and early 80s, before we had formal task force arrangements, I decided to work with a particular police precinct in New York City where they had an extreme problem with violence, the 71st Precinct in Crown Heights. And it was an interesting community. It was half black, half Hasidic Jews. And we had a large population of people from Jamaica and Panama. And a lot of these folks were hardworking, legally present, and that's the other problem. People automatically presume that if someone has a Latino last name that they're probably an illegal alien, which is such a disservice to lots of terrific American citizens and lawful immigrants that people would look askance at them because of that. But on top of that, we knew that these people from the Caribbean had come here on farm worker visas, never went to the farm, got involved with a different cash crop, marijuana, and then eventually they gravitated toward cocaine. The level of violence was mind-boggling. They were averaging shootings every week in this one precinct. So I'd get a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning, we had another shooting. And I would schlep out to the precinct, and if I didn't have a government car in my driveway, we used to take them home so that we could respond quickly. Sometimes I didn't have the car, my partner did, or there was no car available. I would take my own car, park it within the compound. It was a tough neighborhood, and after a while, people knew who I was. I didn't want somebody vandalizing my sports car, which I drove in those days. So I would, you know, go charging into the precinct. And time after time, we saw that these were aliens who had been given farm visas to either work in the citrus groves of Florida or the apple orchards of upstate New York. They never showed up. So they simply used that visa as a method to enter the United States and then got involved in serious crime. So I said, if the goal is to get more workers on the farm, then you need to police the program.
Right.
I mean, you know, this is common sense. If kids are playing hooky, you hire truant officers.
Right.
To think about an analogy I'd never thought about before.
Good, right.
But
no,
if there are kids not showing up to school, they tell the cops, hey, if it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon and some kid who looks to be 14 years old is wandering around, look at his program schedule. See if he's supposed to be out of school at that hour. Or they hire truant officers. Here they said, well, give them the visas. Who cares where they show up? Well, where they showed up were at the scenes of shootings in Brooklyn. I mean, you can't make this up. Folks, I want you to understand that what we're discussing is not about bashing immigrants. It's not about saying, don't let anybody come here. We just want to see a situation where we teach people from day one that we are serious about our laws. You know, they say you get one opportunity for a first impression. For most foreign nationals, the first impression they have, the first encounter they have with the United States is either our border or the immigration laws, whether they encounter them at an American consulate or embassy or when they arrive at a port of entry. And when we convince people that the President of the United States and high-ranking members of the administration and high-ranking members of Congress, both the House and the Senate, could care less about our borders, could care less about our immigration laws, and want to provide pathways to citizenship, the highest honor any country can bestow upon a foreign national, whether it's America, Canada, Australia, England, it doesn't matter. The highest honor you can bestow upon an alien is to make them a part of your society. And in America, we draw no distinction between U.S. citizens who are born here and those who naturalize, other than as to who could be president. I mean, the governor of California, the most populous state, was Arnold Schwarzenegger, a naturalized citizen. So we truly hand over the keys to the kingdom. And the message we have now sent to the world is come to America, violate our borders, violate our laws. Not only should you expect to get away with it, we're going to hand over the keys to the kingdom. It's like telling a burglar, don't break into my house, but if you do, I will give you a key to the front door, and I will prepare the guest room for you.
And leave some cookies.
And leave some cookies and make sure that the dentist takes care of you. And then you can bring your family down, and they can similarly expect to be treated.
Right, yeah.
I mean, what is wrong with this picture?
Well, money and politics, that's what's wrong with the picture.
Well, and we can go back to campaign finance, and my, what I've always told people as an agent, I wasn't allowed to take a cup of coffee, and here these people, you know, get gazillions of dollars, and you don't think it buys influence and leverage and so forth. This is nuts. It's a betrayal. And you know, that's why immigration is so pivotal. People say to me, you have a program that focuses on immigration. How often can you cover an immigration story? In point of fact, folks, you could probably do an immigration story every day and not run out of material because it impacts everything from national security and criminal justice, community safety, the economy, unemployment, health care, education, public health. Everything is getting hammered because we have no idea who we're letting in or why they're here. Homeowners are given a front door that generally has a peephole. You usually get a doorbell or a door knock or some signaling device so that when a stranger shows up, you can make a willful decision as to whether or not you truly want to admit that stranger into your home. And if someone crawls through your back window, he's called a burglar. He's guilty of a crime called breaking and entering. Most countries take their immigration laws so seriously and their borders so seriously that it is an issue that's dealt with by their military or an elite unit that know that they have the authority to take whatever measures are appropriate to secure their country. The United States has made a mockery of our own borders because we are beholden to the contributors. We are beholden as a country to the Chamber of Commerce. We are beholden to the travel and hospitality industries. And we're kind of at the end of the program, but I just want to make a couple of quick points. Ted Poe, Congressman Ted Poe, was trying to get a law passed that said that if a country refuses to accept their own criminal aliens, they don't want them deported back to them, they won't give a travel document, that they should lose the authority for their own citizens to get visas until they start taking responsibility. And eventually it got watered down, and it still can't get out of committee. And they did this report about it. And the reason that he's receiving such a problem with it is because the hotel and travel industries are opposing it. So the bill got watered down so that they wouldn't be able to get diplomatic visas. And what you should know is that the Chamber of Commerce, I call them the Chamber of Horrors, working in concert with the travel, hospitality, and hotel industries, and now they've added the manufacturers to them, have created a program known as the Discover America Partnership. They seem to have forgotten that Al-Qaeda has already discovered America. We've lost so many of our expectations of privacy and freedom in the name of national security, but meanwhile we do everything in our power to make an alien indistinguishable from a citizen and an illegal alien indistinguishable from a lawful immigrant. And so what we have now done is to essentially dismantle America's borders. And for those folks who favor free trade, I'm sure they're ecstatic. But because we don't have control over our borders, the drugs are getting in. The violent gang members are getting in. The cartel's influence is expanding across America right now. Rather than America being the role model for Mexico, the current crop of most politicians, with a couple of notable exceptions, Lou Barletta, Steve King, Jeff Sessions, Chuck Grassley, Ted Poe, and a few others, let me tell you, for them, Mexico should be America's role model. And that's not what America was about. That's not what our soldiers have put their lives on the line for, and it's not what our soldiers throughout the founding of this country have died for. We have a responsibility as citizens of this country. Election Day is coming. It's just a couple of months away. We, the people, need to get our voices heard by those people who profess to represent us. Sitting out the game doesn't work. If you could pay half as much attention to what is going on in Washington and the state capitol and City Hall as you do to who's going to win the World Series or who's winning Dancing with the Stars, then we could make some headway. This is going to take some work on everyone's part, but you need to educate yourself about the issues, which is why I do this radio program. I don't make money doing this. This is a labor of love. Same story with TalkBorder.com. Same story with my own website, MichaelCutler.net. I urge you to go to those websites. I also ask that you go to CAPSWeb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. This is about educating ourselves because knowledge is power. It's increasingly difficult to hear these stories, and that's why I have been trying my best to work with people like Don, who's become a friend. I wish I didn't know Don, not because he's not a nice guy, he's a very nice man, but because of the circumstances under which I met him. You could say the same about the 9/11 family people that I've encountered because of what happened to their families. These stories did not have to happen. These tragedies did not have to happen. They are the result of, at best, willful neglect by our politicians. And in some cases, it's far more insidious than that. But you know what, folks? We are getting the government that we deserve when we fail to get involved. The Founding Fathers understood that the most important title, political title, in these United States of America is that of citizen. The politicians may think that they're pompous fools, and I may agree that they are pompous fools, but the one constant is the citizenry. We as citizens have every right to be involved. This isn't a conservative issue or a liberal issue, a Democrat issue or a Republican issue. These are American issues. No good American wants to see their fellow Americans injured or killed. No decent American wants to see his neighbor out of work or lose his home to foreclosure or have his children live in poverty. And that's what is happening in increasing numbers in America because we have been sold out by politicians who were elected to represent us. We need to be better employers. These politicians that do this to us are being insubordinate, and in the workplace, insubordination will get you fired. And it's time that we, the people, saw this as an analogy to that. If you believe that that person that claims to represent you is not representing you, is being insubordinate, be involved in the electoral process. Because if we don't make the changes, they will make the changes for us, and I assure you, they will not be what anybody wants. I'll give you the last word, Don.
Well, all I can say really is, Mike, thank you for doing this. Certainly thank you for having me on the show so I can, you know, say, you know, what I want to say. I'm sort of in the same boat as you. What I've been doing, I'm doing, you know, I don't get paid for going to Sacramento. I don't get paid for going to all the meetings that I've been doing. I'm trying to, you know, people have asked me, you know, why don't you just, you know, let it go and live your life. And I said, you know, if somebody had done this for me, or if somebody had done this years ago, my son would be alive today.
Yep.
And that's why I'm doing this. If I could throw out one thing, and it's not done yet, but it's my website is up.
Oh, good.
Even though, well, there's only two things on it right now, but so many people were asking about what was going on, I figured I'd put it up.
Sure.
It's unlicensedtokill.org. And the entire story from the moment my son was killed, and actually a little beforehand, up to right before the trial is there. And my son, who came with me to the trial for 2 weeks in San Francisco, did a blog. And you can read basically what happened day to day. We haven't updated the verdict part of it yet, but we will be. And there'll be more stuff on the site, but it's there. Again, unlicensedtokill.org, and invite anybody to...
By the way, if you want, you could certainly include the website to the interview that I did with you to talkborder.com onto your
great,
website.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm meeting with my web guy Tuesday, and we'll get back on this thing. I've been tied up with the trial and everything.
Sure. No. But
now I've got to get it finished. No, thank you. I appreciate that. I will definitely do that because we did want to have a lot of links, and I'll link a lot of the other stuff you taught, you know, that you do, because it is very important that people see that. So
you know, I will. And by the way, how many news programs have asked you to come on to talk about what happened?
Well, I've been on a lot of radio shows.
Okay,
news
that's
program,
good.
News programs have been somewhat limited. I mean, I've been a lot of like TV news when they, you know, if there's an issue, they call me up and ask me.
Right.
I've really wanted to do some long form, and have not been able to do that yet because, you know, getting one or two lines in a news story doesn't tell the story.
And isn't that pretty much how TV covers the news these days, a three-minute soundbite, and then we move on to the next issue?
Yeah, well, and what happens is, you know, I say something, and they play it, and then somebody else says something, and they play it, and I'm, like, sitting there when I'm watching, I'm going, that guy either doesn't know what he's talking about, or worse yet, he's lying, but there's no retort. You don't get
an opportunity. Well, you know, it's funny. My mother used to say to me, it doesn't pay to win an argument with an idiot. Many times when I've been on national TV, I've had that feeling that I was having a debate with an idiot.
Right, yeah.
But you're completely right. You know, there was a wonderful line in that film, Man of the Year, when Robin Williams played Tom Dobbs, who ran for president, if you remember that film.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And do you remember what his advisors told him? I think it may have been Lewis Black, who said the danger of the split screen is that two people on a split screen get equal credibility in the eyes of the viewer, even if they don't have it.
Right, yeah.
I think the analogy that he used was you could have a college professor who survived the Holocaust debating a guy who dropped out of high school and argues the Holocaust never happened, but because of split screen, they have equal credibility.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to put it because I felt that way. Look, I was on a news thing where I was on quoted, and Cardinal Mahoney from Los Angeles, the one that had to pay off for all the sex scandal, he was on. And he made it, you know, so I make my comment, and I don't even know that he's going to be on it. He makes his comment, and there we go. And his comment was basically, you know, about the impounding on cars. Why should we take away their cars? What good does that do? Now, if I would have had a chance to respond,
it would have saved your son's life.
That's right. Well, I wrote him a pretty nasty letter, which of course he never responded to.
Of course not.
But yes, that was very simple. My son would be alive, so yep. Don't tell me what good would it do.
You know, it's so remarkable. They had a reporter come on in Arizona, and they did a story about Jan Brewer issuing an executive order saying we will not issue driver's licenses to illegal aliens, even if the president gives them employment authorization. And some people commented me and said, well, what's the point to that? And I said, here's the point. She needed to give an executive order to provide clarity for the people who work for her, like the folks at Motor Vehicle. As an immigration agent, if I was working right now, if I encountered an alien who'd been granted employment authorization under this program, I could not take that alien into custody. I mean, for what purpose? I can't put him before an immigration judge. He now has de facto authority for at least the next 2 years to remain in the United States and work. So unless I was arresting him because he got involved in a marriage fraud or he was selling phony documents or something else, from an immigration perspective, he's somebody that we could take no action against. So that raises the question, well, what do you do if you're working motor vehicles in Arizona and then walks one of these aliens who got this benefit? So all that she was doing was really creating clear policy. What a refreshing change that is. And saying, no. Listen, this guy is still an illegal alien as far as we're concerned. But what was so remarkable was this immigration lawyer came on and said, oh, this is ridiculous. She's grandstanding. And it wasn't about grandstanding. It was about, I think, and I can't speak for Governor Brewer, but, you know, I did work with the law firm that she had retained to defend them against the lawsuit over SB 1070. And I said, no, this isn't about grandstanding. This is about reaffirming for her employees what the state's policies are, so that they don't do something that's inconsistency with what the governor says is the policy and law of the state of Arizona. Now, if there's a lawsuit, it's not the state employee who's going to get sued. It'll be the state, and I'm going to guess Jan's all set to deal with it, Governor Brewer. But that's what people need to understand. While politicians are known for grandstanding and doing all sorts of things, in that case, I thought it showed good leadership to say, you know something? I'm anticipating that you're going to wind up with aliens coming in tomorrow with this document, and this is how I expect you to deal with them. So, you know, there's got to be consistency and there has to be leadership. And the leadership should be, number one, constitutional, and number two, should take into account what's best for Americans. You know, as I said on Curtis Lee, I don't know if I mentioned it on the program, one of the points that I made is why is it that we see these actors and actresses who go, you know, how far from home to what country in the third world to find a child worthy of adoption? Meanwhile, there was a story recently on the news, I forget if it was 100,000 or hundreds of thousands of American kids are living in foster homes or living in orphanages desperate to be adopted, desperate to sleep in a bed in a family that they can call their own. And you have these wealthy folks who hop in their private jet planes and fly 12,000 miles to find a child living in on another continent, when all they maybe need to do is go 12 miles from where they live to find a child who's no less worthy of adoption and who doesn't, who's just as needing of that kind of consideration and opportunity. Why is it that we no longer think that we need to put Americans first as Americans?
That is amazing.
And Slee will like that. He said, well, you mean like Angelina Jolie and Madonna? I said, yeah. I'm very happy that they want to be altruistic. That's thrilling. And I commend them for it. But I would have been a hell of a lot happier if I had seen that the recipient of what they're able to provide these children were American kids. I'm sure you're old enough to remember Roy Rogers. Roy Rogers had, I think, like six kids of his own, and he and Dale Evans, his wife, adopted, like, I don't know, eight kids. And it looked like a League of Nations. There was a black kid, a Latino kid, a white kid, a Native American, Indian kid. They were of every flavor of the spectrum, and they were American kids who got adopted because he was a very wealthy guy. He was a TV star. He had this huge ranch, the Double R Bar Ranch. I even remember that. I had a lunchbox with a Double R Bar brand on it and a picture of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans when I was in second or third grade. And that was what he did. he adopted American kids from every race, religion, and ethnicity and made them as much a part of his family as were the kids that Dale Evans had given birth to. What a wonderful role model he was. Wouldn't it be nice if someone stepped up to the plate in a similar set of circumstances today and did the same sort of thing?
That's a good final word.
Well, Don, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today. I have to get you back. It's always good to chat with you, whether on the program or on a phone call. Hopefully live and in person before too very long. But I'm glad that the issue was sort of resolved, but goodness, I can't even imagine the nightmares, the stress, the way that your life has been irrevocably, if I can get the word out, altered by a tragedy that never had to happen. That's how I felt about 9/11. That's how I felt about what happened to police officer Robert Machete. Certainly how I feel about Drew Rosenberg. This never had to happen. Our immigration laws, folks, are designed to protect American lives and American jobs. This isn't about racism. I don't care how hard the other side tries to portray it that way. I assure you that Don is not a bigot. I can tell you that I'm not a bigot. I enforce those laws. I've taken some truly evil people off of the streets of New York and elsewhere by doing my job, as did my colleagues. And that is the reason for the immigration laws. Final thought, one of the things I do is a speaking engagement for a group called Allen L. Freed Associates. They do seminars for the government, for the military, for the intelligence services. And whenever I'm in front of the military, and I do that fairly frequently for them, I was in front of a room filled with generals and colonels, and I said, why on earth do we still have a military? And you could see, as you can imagine, Don, the reaction. And I said, look, I'm a huge fan of the military. Don't misunderstand for a heartbeat what I'm saying. We as a nation can never, ever repay or come close to repaying the gallantry and the valor of our men and women in the military. And by the way, while we're at it, I could say the same thing about law enforcement. People who go in harm's way and come home terribly injured or not come home at all in defense of our Constitution and in defense of our country. But in point of fact, the primary mission of our military is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible. How on earth can the primary mission be achieved when our borders only exist on maps, and when there are already millions, I would argue tens of millions, of illegal aliens scattered across our country from the four corners of the globe? There is no record of their presence here. We have no way of knowing anything about their backgrounds, their affiliations, or their intentions. And if, God forbid, there's another terrorist attack, I can assure you that our nuclear submarines, our aircraft carriers, our stealth bombers, our ICBMs will be useless and worthless. If we don't secure the borders, and if we don't make clear distinctions between what it is to be a citizen and an alien, then we are destroying our country. The Second World War was won by a generation of Americans who have come to be known collectively as the greatest generation. My concern is that we will be remembered by history as America's last generation, God forbid. Please, folks, get involved. I want to remind all of you, as I always do at the end of my programs, that democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody. Don, thank you again. Have a great weekend. My regards to the family. I'll have to speak with you offline later on. But again, folks, thank you so much for joining me. Hope to join you again next week at the same time. Have a great weekend, everybody. So long.